All right, welcome to episode 16 of the Cowcast, Listener Questions and Answers. All right, and welcome to another episode of the Cowcast. I am Eric.
I am James.
And we are here to answer some questions from some of our listeners who sent them over to us before we did the last episode, when we did kind of our recap and outlook for 2017. Based on how long that episode went, talking with Chris, we didn't answer these questions because they drilled down a little bit deeper. But we wanted to come back and answer them and make sure that they got handled. So,
although we did kind of touch on some of these questions in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
But now, we'll explain a little bit better.
Yeah. So with that being said, we've got two sets. The first questions we've got are from our friend Jason in Hawaii. And Jason was kind enough to send us a few holiday goodies. We had some coffee and some macadamia nuts.
My wife was incredibly thankful for the coffee.
And
Lion coffee.
Mine was incredibly thankful for the chocolate-covered macadamia nuts.
In fact, I had some of the Lion coffee this morning.
How was it?
Delicious.
Wonderful.
It was great.
We have to do a coffee swap soon.
For sure. Absolutely. Right. Maybe some Anodyne.
Yeah, we should send some. Or Stone Creek.
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Anyway, so Jason, thank you for those gifts. That was awesome. Nobody that's listening, you don't need to send us anything. It was just a nice little surprise, and it was awesome. We appreciated it.
No, you need to send us.
Yeah. So the first question that Jason sent us was, how are current comic book shops trying to attract new customers, especially female customers? James, I'll let you start.
So I guess it's a very subjective question, obviously, because unless you're a chain, you're not going to have any two comic shops that are going to be uniformly trying to do the same thing to attract new customers. So I think if we wanted to narrow the question down a little bit, how are we trying to attract new customers? It comes down to being the biggest thing, especially if you're trying to attract female customers, is shedding the comic book store stereotype. And everybody always uses The Simpsons as the go-to, the Android's Dungeon, which is actually a real comic book store. But everyone uses that as kind of their go-to. And I think it is apt. It's a good comparison. You've got your stereotypical comic shop guy who's named Comic Shop Guy, critical and judgmental of everything. You've got posters in the window. And that's, growing up, those were the comic shops that I went to. They were kind of like dives, you know, and you could never see inside from the outside. All you could see were the posters that had been hung 8 years ago and were sun faded. And then when you went inside, there's like no natural light. It's kind of everything's sort of a mess. And it appeals to a certain group of people, but you're never really going to expand your business very much doing that. So I think what we're doing and what seems to work well for us, we have big windows that look right out on the street. We took almost all of our posters and signage out of there to completely open it up. There's a lot of natural lighting, especially at night when you drive by. You can see from the street all the way to the back of the store. So I think it makes it very inviting. There's nothing hiding in here. You know, everything's very open. We get, as far as appealing to female customers, I would say that happens because we've sort of jettisoned that image, and now we're more of like the – and I know that this is there's a stigma attached to this too, because we talked about this when we were talking about the conventions and things, but more of like a pop culture cool store. Now, admittedly, I'm not going to argue that with your average Joe off the street if they're coming in here to buy a Metallica record and a Lemmy Funko Pop and a pack of Yu-Gi-Oh cards. But what do I focus on? I'm focusing on comic books still. You know, I want to get great collections in. I'm going to spend most of my time working on the comic end of things. So in my mind, we're still a comic shop, and that's what I think of it as, and that's what I treat it as. But we're kind of a neighborhood hangout, you know, and we've got a lot of different things that bring in a lot of different people. And so we do get a healthy amount of female customers, because they come in, they're walking around downtown here. We're not, we get that walk-in traffic that a lot of stores want to have, but I do think that if we still had the, I don't know, AVX posters in the windows that had been left up for 4 years and everything was totally blocked off, I don't think a lot of people would come in here. You know, what is there to offer mm-hmm. when you walk by? It doesn't, there's nothing appealing to your average Joe on the street. As it stands, we have a lot of people that come in and never come back, but that's just because it's, they don't, you know, there's nothing in here for them.
Yeah, they've never but been in, so they'll stop in,
check right, a look. But at least they've come in, mm-hmm. and that's huge, and maybe those people never would have come in before. So I think having a clean store, having an open store, if you have windows, embrace them. Don't block them off. Let people see what's going on inside. You know, don't make it look like you're about to enter some kind of labyrinth when you're yeah. opening this door. It just, you want to have a place that's inviting, that's warm. I mean, have nice warm lighting, and just make it seem like a place that anybody can go into, you know. I know it doesn't necessarily mesh with a lot of the common perceptions of a comic book store, but I think that you have to, in this day and age, you have to have a different business model. You can't just have 60 long boxes turned on their side that you're using as makeshift shelves. And, you know, the old comic shops from when I was a kid, most of them aren't around anymore, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and I think as far as, you know, the store goes and things like that, I think those are all good points. I think another thing that we're pretty careful about here is the way we interact with customers and what they see us doing.
Mm-hmm.
So really the only time that we plant ourselves behind the counter is when someone's here, we're ringing up a sale, things like that. But we're frequently moving. We're always moving around the store, not in a pestering manner, more in a we've always got stuff to do. There's mm-hmm. always work to be done. Right. And so I think that is a way that it lessens some of the tension where you don't feel like you're being stared at and, you know, watched. You're allowed to come in and move around, do what mm-hmm. you need to do. You see us moving, looking at things, you feel empowered to go ahead and touch something if you want to. And I think that along with that, we do a careful job of kind of paying attention to who's coming in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Always acknowledging when someone walks in, whether they've been here 50 times before, it's their first time in. And we kind of know how to read individuals to an extent where you can tell if someone's never been here before and has no clue what they're stepping into, we'll kind of offer them a more guided experience if they need to. You can tell if someone's been here before, we just kind of say, hey, if you need anything, give a shout. If you want what's in your pull box, let us know, that kind of thing. And I think that that also goes a long way, whether it's male or female, to kind of helping figure out what you want to do. And
so we can talk about what we do, and we can talk about all that all day long because that's what we're the authority on.
Right.
But I think in general, if we wanted to answer this question a little bit better, how are shops attracting female customers? I think, and this may sound counterproductive, but I think the best way to do that is to don't try to attract female customers. Try to attract everyone.
Right.
Because otherwise any attempt to really, I'm sure that there are some shops probably in more heavily populated areas that have a great, you know, like girls book club night or something like that. And if that works, that's really cool. But I think most of the time it could really seem like pandering.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing that you can do is kind of take more of a corporate approach to how you run your store and who you're trying to attract. Try to attract everyone.
Right. Fully inclusive, doesn't matter exactly. Who or what.
Attract everybody and don't try to go for one or two different groups. Try to have everybody come in because if you're pandering to one demographic, you may be alienating another one,
right.
You know, in the process of that. So just try to get everybody in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can be a little honest about it. We've talked about staffing and how we handle that. You know, mm-hmm. right now it's you and Sam and myself. We're all three men, and we have had the discussion of, do we need to look at adding a female staff person to help, you know, offset some of that balance? And basically what we've gotten to is the point you just brought up is if we need to hire an employee, we'll take the most qualified person at the mm-hmm. time. And the qualified person needs to be able to communicate and work with whoever it is. We are fully inclusive. You know, everyone is entitled to their own beliefs, values, opinions, whatever. And that's what we're here for. You know, there's so many different things that are brought up and talked about and discussed in comics through different means for different reasons. And there's no reason why we can't accept the actual individuals the same. So, you know, for us, it's everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. If it comes down to having to hire someone, which, I mean, the nice thing is we don't have to right now.
Right.
You know, if we did, we're just going to hire, like you said, we're going to hire whoever's is the best person for the job. So, yep. But yeah, that would be my best advice for trying to attract new customers, but especially female customers. Just try to attract everyone, because then you'll get everybody in.
So kind of along with that, the next question that Jason...
Although retention is going to be the next
right, that's question, always the...
which is... So when you do get these people in, you know, go... Just be as, again, corporatized as possible. Be professional. Make sure that your store is clean. Make sure... If it's not clean for some reason, if you're moving one... If you're doing a reset and you're moving your action figures from one side of the store to the other... Tell people what's going on when they're walking around in your store. If they come in and you're doing like a massive move, say, "Hey, sorry, excuse the mess. We're moving this stuff from here to that side of the store. You know, let us know if you need something." Be professional. Be courteous about it. It's a business, and too often it's treated like a hobby where people come in and sometimes hand you money. And you need to treat it like a professional business, and that's how you retain those customers once you've attracted them in here. Again, just remember that you're first and foremost you're a business. That it's a place that is. You're going to get a lot of people that feel like they are like this is their safe hangout area, and that's great, and you should embrace that to some extent.
Yep.
But first and foremost, if you want to stay in business, you have to treat it like a business.
And I was just going to say to that end, I don't want to dive deep on this, but for those of you that are listening that are pondering opening a store of your own, or maybe you have a store and things aren't quite clicking and you're trying to get some insight, one thing that we hold very firm to is if we're making a move, like if we're moving all those action figures from one side to another, if we're installing 4 new bookcases and 3 new shelves, don't close.
Oh, yeah. Well,
don't close your doors. I mean, you try and stagger it so that the big stuff happens off hours.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're closed for 2 or 3 days because you're moving something, that's lost business. And you could have those people that could be those people you're going to retain show up, the door's locked, they can't come in, they're disenfranchised, they're not going to come back. So we try very hard to not close our doors unless if it's something like a holiday that we know no one's coming out for, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Or if it's just been a terrible weather day, we may close an hour early.
Right. We closed like an hour early when we had our last snowstorm. But, you know, even then, we're vocal about it. We put it on Facebook.
Right.
And sorry, everybody, we're closing an hour early due to the storms.
Close to sign.
You know, if there's some weather advisory where schools are canceled, et cetera, I don't think anybody's really going to hold it against us. At the same time, what you're saying is absolutely true. Figure out a way. I mean, again, there are some people some store owners that really don't want to have to do anything outside of the main hours of operation of their store. And it's good to have a work-life balance. But if it's something where you're going to have to, you know that what you're doing is so large that you're going to have to, you don't want to be open. Like it's something you can't do while you're doing this project. Then come in at 8 p.m. and work overnight, you know? I mean, just do it overnight. And then say the next day that you're going to have reduced hours or something. But there's always ways to do moves like that that aren't going to impact your business. That turning away business is one of the biggest no's that you can do.
So the next question that Jason had for us was basically, is customer service more important now than ever with, you know, increased competition? He's got a couple of different examples. I'm going to expand it. So we've got online sales, you've got digital sales, you've got, you know, these new fly-by-night shops in the mall, Barnes & Noble selling books, all those kinds of things. So is customer service more important now than ever.
Yeah. Well, obviously.
Always. You can talk about, like, things, examples I brought up, some of the customer service-based things we do. But being a comic store, you're afforded additional ways to meet the consumer's needs, right? We have instant access into Diamond. So if there's a product someone wants and we don't have it, we can order it. We've got multiple ways of shipping it. We can receive it in 2 weeks with our order. We can fast track it to come within a couple of days if we absolutely have to. So we have that. And then there's always the added component of we're the specialty shop, right? So if you want to come talk shop, whether it's with us, other customers, whomever, we're your avenue for that and making sure that that's provided, you know, in a safe, clean, enjoyable experience is paramount.
Mm-hmm.
We also do things like, we obviously, for those that haven't listened to us before, you don't know this potentially, but for those that have, you know that we're based in Wisconsin. We're in southeastern Wisconsin, and we have pull list subscribers in other states. That's part of customer service. You find someone who really appreciates you and your product, and you do what you can to meet that demand. So we, you know, monthly ship boxes.
Well, customer service, really the definition and what's included in that is going to vary completely from business to business. So I would say, here's our Diamond order.
All right. How do you do that? Back to customer service, interrupted by the Diamond delivery, which is never a bad thing. And for those of you that doubt that we're doing this in the store, that should be your clue.
Yeah. We always sorry for the phone calls. We thought we turned the phone off.
Yeah, and if you hear cars going by, then that's
or an accident.
Yeah.
Anyway, customer service is going to be completely different no matter what business you're in. The definition of what customer service should be for you is going to matter more than anything about what kind of product you sell. So I think for comic stores, more specifically game stores, but let's be honest, most comic stores do sell games. One aspect of customer service that should be embraced is having tables, gaming tables, and hosting events, because you could sell, if you sell Magic cards or Games Workshop, you sell Warhammer, what you need to do something to attract people to come in and buy that product from you. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, availability isn't just going to get those gamers into your store. So I think part of customer service for a game store or comic store will, again, hosting events, I know that can be intimidating for some people. If you just want to open a comic book store and you slowly start selling Magic cards and then people want to play there, and now you got to buy tables and got to get chairs. And now people want to run play sanctioned events at your store. And now what do you do? You know, it's worth doing. It's worth doing because you're going to, anytime you run something like that, you're going to get people into the store, and assuming you're doing it right. And those people, even if they aren't buying their Magic product from you, as long as they're in the store and you're doing it right, they should be buying candy and soda and bottled water and a bag of chips, sleeves for their cards. Even if you can get $12 a person out of these people for coming in, that's because you're going above and beyond on what customer service should be for your store. I think it's in every store's best interest, if they sell that product, to at the very least have a space, even if you don't run it, where you will host these events and allow people to come in and do whatever it is they want to do.
And I think part of that as well is also taking into account the fact that customer service is more than just having the product. There's times where we have to take a step back and say, you know what, we're not the experts. We don't know how to run Magic. We don't know how to run Pokemon. We don't know how to run Yu-Gi-Oh!, things like that. And what we do is we bring in those experts to run those events. So we're still here running the store, but we will bring in the experts on those product lines to be the ones to shepherd whoever it is that wants to play and wants to do those different things. And that's the biggest way that we can safeguard and make sure that what the people that are coming in to do this want, we can offer. So that's a huge role of customer service for us.
Mm-hmm. Grading is another area for comic shops with customer service. It can be a pain in the butt. You really don't make any money from doing it. But the danger of not doing it is if there's a store within driving distance that does offer that service, you're driving your customer to them. So it's something where it eats up some time, and it can be a little bit annoying figuring out what tier someone's book that they want to submit falls into, and you got to figure out, you know, how much you want to insure everything for, and break down the shipping costs. It's worth doing because the biggest thing is, again, the biggest issue is don't offer service because you don't think it's going to make you money. Look at the other side of things, and if it's going to drive someone to someone else who does provide that service, they'll probably take their pull list there. And because you didn't want to spend the 20 minutes to submit their books for them, now you've lost, you know what, $1,000 or $2,000 a year if it's someone who gets a lot of books. So always look at the long-term benefit of offering certain services.
Agreed.
Okay. So I think that kind of wraps up the questions from Jason. Now we got a set of questions from Drew and Kyle. And these
Do you think we'll get less interruptions this time?
Doubtful. Yeah. It's part of running a business, right?
Oh, yeah.
So from Drew and Kyle, they really focused in on a couple of things from a publisher and book standpoint for us. So what can and should publishers, big two, mid-tier, smaller publishers, do to support the LCS and help you succeed in the new year? I think this one we kind of wrapped in and covered in our last episode. It was kind of basically all things varying from don't publish crap. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. You know, the variant shenanigans that Marvel can play sometimes get to be a little heavy-handed, a little over the top. In the way that DC and Valiant, we talked about how they've worked with us for multiple different things, whether it's events, whether it's actual product on the shelf. We talked about how we couldn't order the Rebirth issue through Diamond because it wasn't ready and available. We reached out to DC and they were able to get us some of their stock that we could have a couple on the shelf for some of our subscribers who didn't get the book. So, I mean, there's things that publishers can do, and that's really just embrace the retailer and work with us. Come to us and ask us what we need because we'll tell you. But did you want to add anything different from what I just said or what we said on our last episode?
Not really. It kind of comes down to just harping on the same topics we talked about last time. What would help a store like us succeed? Less relaunches. And again, we won't go into the whole thing again. And I know that, you know, it is beneficial for short term for Marvel to have the relaunches, but less relaunches, it does serve as a jumping off point for people as much as a jumping on point. So less of those. But otherwise, I don't know. I mean, every publisher is going to have a different approach to how they support stores. I guess the big thing would be maybe offer for some companies a clearly defined way to get in to reach somebody from one of these companies. Some sort of outreach, something where I don't know, if like for Marvel, if they were to have some sort of regional reps that handle this region, and this is somebody that if you have a question you can go to, you know, somebody who you someone who you've got a name for and isn't I mean, we've never even really, I guess, tried to reach out to anyone at Marvel, but we have met plenty of people from DC, plenty of people from Valiant who not only have we met them, but we've met them in person. We've corresponded with them many times. Mm-hmm. They've answered questions. They've been prompt about it. I think that customer service from a publisher standpoint could improve a little bit for some of the companies as far as helping shops like us. But
yeah,
other than that, I don't know. I mean, it's all going to come down. It's going to be a store by store basis. And what might work for us might not work for another store.
Yeah.
Might not matter at all.
All right. So into the fun stuff, where this is where we get to look at our numbers, use our minds and scratch our heads and think back over the last year. The first question for the books section of this is, what title or titles did you overorder this year that you wish you could reorder lower?
Civil War II and all the Civil War II tie-ins, they are just sitting on the shelf. And yeah, we sold a good amount, a healthy amount of Civil War II, but not anything like people were saying. Like, there was a lot of PR out about the book. It was a sequel to, you know, a big Marvel event came out when a movie called Civil War wasn't fresh in everybody's mind. But it just didn't have any real staying power.
Yeah. It didn't Nobody help was, that it had its big delay because of the right. art that, you know.
That didn't help, but I think the bigger problem is just that nobody was really excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tie-ins, too many tie-ins for it, way too many tie-ins. And people were just, the reception was totally lukewarm.
Some were
for
good.
Civil War II.
A lot didn't get any play here.
Right. But more than anything else, we just didn't see any excitement about it.
Yep.
We had people, I would say that the best feedback that we got about the book from people was, yes, I like Civil War II.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's fine. I'm glad that people liked it, but if it's your big event and you have next to no excitement generated about the book, it doesn't bode well. And again, too many tie-ins. Too many tie-ins turned people off. I know there were plenty of people that were confused because of the branding that they would put on a lot of books. This is a Civil War II tie-in. So we had a lot of people that were grabbing the Civil War II Amazing Spider-Man tie-in when that came out, that were our normal Amazing Spider-Man readers. And they didn't look closely at it, but I think what they should do is either limit your tie-ins to being in core titles and don't double up. So if you have an Amazing Spider-Man Civil War II, don't have anything in any of the Spider-Man books that's going to tie into Civil War II as well, because it just confuses people. And we had some people that returned books that they bought, and normally we're not going to do that, mm-hmm. but they were regulars and we knew that they made an honest mistake.
Right.
So we had people that were just really put off by it. And there didn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason to it. On that same note, another one that Marvel had really been hyping was the Renew Your Vows. And we ordered a ton of that. And that's another one where people were confused. There was a Renew Your Vows that came out during Secret Wars. And a lot of people just looked at it and just kind of didn't know what to make
Which
of
is,
this.
That one is a shame because that's a really good book.
Well, the question is, should they have called it something different? It comes down to not to beat a dead horse on stuff we talked about last time, but it comes down to sort of just saturation
exactly.
dilution of the branding. The other one that nobody was really excited about was Death of X. And now we're seeing that going into Inhumans versus X-Men, where people just, at least here, don't really seem to care. And we can push the book on people. That's the job of a retailer. Is to push a title on people and to be excited about it. And you can do that to a point, but if someone's been reading comic books for 10 or 15 years or even 5 years, they generally tend to know what's going on. You know, mm-hmm. they're looking at stuff online, they're reading previews, they know what's coming out, and people are smart enough to, I don't want to say to, here's the best way to put it. I think people are getting sick and tired of events. The people that should have been excited about this are big Inhumans readers, are X-Men readers. They didn't care. We had some people that don't want any of the tie-ins, right. any of these stories. Like, they don't want to get the core books during some of these tie-ins. And that's a difficult thing for us. It's I think that more than anything else, things like Civil War II, Death of X, which it's a big chain event, because you had Death of X and then now you have IVX and whatever is going to be coming afterwards, and Renew Your Vows, which just had a Renew Your Vows last year.
Yep. They had a four-issue mini and ongoing.
People are not getting excited about events anymore. That's a big thing that we're seeing. It's just this kind of but they're
I've got specifically
Marvel.
I was gonna say
But I'm just seeing people are there's a malaise setting in where, you know, when events are the norm, it's not an event anymore.
Well, and if your events continually have delays and then add issues, and one event bookends another event, which bookends another event.
Well, exactly. And I don't think out. I don't think that I would argue that the delays hurt. I don't think that the delays really had much of an effect sales wise for us in Civil War II. I think
that's because what we had. The people that were buying Civil War II were buying it all the way through. We didn't have people completely new to it coming in and taking it off the shelf and sampling it. That really didn't happen much.
Right. No, that's true. But I think, again, the biggest problem was the – so if people are going to buy a title at the first issue, and we know that 90% of the people that buy this event book are going to buy all 8 issues of it, then what – then why do we – when we put our order in – and we put our order in – we did our due diligence to try to come up with the right numbers. Why do we have so many copies sitting on the shelf? And that comes – again, it comes down to that – the fact that there's a malaise setting in where events are just not gripping people anymore. It's not
right.
– if everything is an event, they're no longer
events.
Now it's the norm. And I think that that is the biggest issue where people just don't care anymore about Hulk getting shot by Hawkeye. Nobody cared about that. That's something that 5 years ago, it would have been a huge talking point. People would have been in the store that Wednesday or the week after talking about it. It's like nobody cares.
Right.
You know? And I see that. I can sense that malaise in a lot of the customers that years ago would have been very excited about it, very galvanized by what Marvel is doing. But now it's just all that they do. So again,
I think that's also indicative of spreading yourself too thin. You know, by pumping out as many books as they do, it reduces the amount of people reading your core titles because they're taking their dollars and spreading them out to the character or characters that are interesting to them. So if you've got, you know, if you've got, just trying to think of a good example, you could take your X-Men, you know, anything like that. If you dilute those characters out, give them each their own standalone book, and then maybe give one set an event somewhere, and then you've got your main X-Men book. You've now taken what could have been maybe 30 subscribers, and you've dwindled that down to 15 because the other 15 have picked up other books, and at $3.99 a book, they're not going to buy, you know, 6 books a month when they used to just buy one. So now you've taken the excitement for one title and diluted it out across, and you've got 2 people on this one person on this one, 3 on this one. It's not happening, and that's part of the problem. I mean, you think about what DC did this year. This place was buzzing after Rebirth for a good 2 months. I mean, one issue pulled everything together, 80 pages, and people were just all over it. It was fun to be a part of it because that was an event.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that really got all readers excited because there was so much that happened and it was done and they had a conclusion and left questions unanswered. So
My answer to number 2, I can sum this up really, really quickly. What titles did I overorder this year? I wish I could reorder lower. Marvel events. And it, right. Okay. A great example of us, I guess steering our orders to where they need to be because of that would be Monsters Unleashed that I ordered about a third of
right.
versus what I would have ordered on it this time last year. And we've still got some on the shelf. So it's just another event. And conversely, I'll just give you my,
No, because I got to give my answer to number 2.
Go ahead.
My answer is also Marvel events.
Okay.
With one extra.
Oh.
One asterisk.
Go ahead.
One thing that we did because we wanted to try it. We wanted to push it. There was some returnability to it. And that's 4,180 from Valiant. We really tried to push that. We've really tried to work hard at getting readers to grasp on to different aspects of the Valiant universe. But that's one that I think issues 2 and 3 going back, I would have ordered less on.
Yeah, we have a lot left.
If anyone's looking for 4,180, give us a shout.
Yeah. Well, in Valiant, so Valiant's a company that I don't want to be punny here, but they're giving it a valiant effort to create a superhero universe where there doesn't really exist a vacuum for one.
Right.
And that's, I guess that's the biggest issue with trying to, we try to sell Valiant because they're an easy company to work with. They are good, to go back to the earlier question, they're very, very good to a store with the way they support us. And so what that does is that drives a retailer to want to go ahead and support them. The problem is you can only try so hard to do that and so much. And we felt like we had really successfully pushed Bloodshot Reborn on readers. The problem is when we started seeing the drop off in readership on that title was when Bloodshot started really tying back into the larger Valiant universe. And what happened then is people just were like, I'm not feeling the whole thing, you know, X of Mana War shows up or something.
And that was my reaction when I read Divinity, the first trade. Mm-hmm. I was loving it. And then the last two, three pages, I was like, oh, really? All of this? Right. All right. That just killed it.
So we've got, oddly enough now, Valiant's top-selling book here is not Bloodshot. It's not Faith. It's Archer and Armstrong. And I think that's because there is a market for a well-written sort of superhero comedy book. It's very much in the same. So I would recommend Archer and Armstrong to people that read Deadpool. If you like Deadpool and you want to try an independent or at least a book that's not part of the big two, I would say try Archer and Armstrong. But again, the question is there that vacuum to push people into? If you try to sell people on it's a smaller superhero universe that you can kind of try to get in close to the ground floor on, eventually, just like what happened with the Ultimate Universe, the continuity builds and builds, and people will always be turned off in the long run by continuity if they have to keep doing research. I think that you do get the people for whom that encourages them to do that research, and they get excited about it and they embrace it. But I think that our average reader, if they've got to go back and read these seven stories to understand the story that's coming out now, probably won't do that, which is one of the reasons that Bloodshot Reborn was a great jumping on point for Valiant readers, because that first issue summed up the whole 36 issue or whatever Bloodshot,
which was a series. Really a good run, the first 36.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, even the Reborn was a good run.
Absolutely. It summed that whole thing up pretty quickly. It gave the gist of it. You didn't have to read that to understand what happened. And it was cool because you were kind of, you almost sort of had the character's perspective with what had happened to him in the book when you were reading it. But eventually, with, like we said, Bloodshot ended up tying in bigger to the Valiant universe, and that's just where we saw people jumping off. I want to just make a point. Did you have anything else as far as books that you would have underordered?
No.
What are the books that I wish I could have increased because they sold out? Now, the obvious answer to this, there's going to be a couple of them, but 7 to Eternity is one that I could have ordered 100 copies of, and we would have sold out. We would have been sold out in the first month. Mm-hmm. Now, do I wish that I had ordered a bunch of copies because the first issue is selling for $60 now? Well, yeah, sure, but I'm... So one instance of comic stores doing the wrong thing that I see is if they have books that have been sitting forever on their shelf, and then all of a sudden something happens. There's a TV deal or a movie deal. A character becomes relevant in a book for some reason. Now all of a sudden everyone's after these books that are $3.99 on your shelf. Well, all too often, what happens is a store will take those books and mark them up to $10, right? Because now they're people are excited to find them, whereas the day before they would have been thrilled beyond belief to have someone come in and buy them all for $3.99. I will give you a really, really perfect example of that in our store. Is when Carrie Fisher died, we had 40 issues of the Princess Leia series on the shelf, And we had people calling us asking if we had the Princess Leia comic. And we said, yeah, absolutely. People were coming in, buying up a ton of copies of the first issue. We're not going to jack the price up on that. If people want to come in and buy those books that have been sitting on our shelves for over a year.
Thank you.
Right? That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And also we're not going to be, we're not going to mark those books up because someone died. But more to the point, it's like don't look a gift horse in the mouth. If somebody wants to buy this product, something with a book like 7-2 Eternity, if we could have known what the drive on that book would be, and we would have ordered 200 copies and said,
sure,
you can come in here and pick a first print up. We wouldn't have raised the price. You could limit it to one per person, but you're going to have people driving here to get it. And I don't, just like I said, it's not just because it's going for a lot in the secondhand market. The book's exploded in popularity. Mm-hmm. People are calling it the next saga. I could have sold a lot more of that book at cover price than I could have Civil War II. I wish I had reordered that just from a couple of weeks ago, which technically qualifies because we ordered it last year. Curse words. We've had a ton of people calling asking for curse words. And I think we ordered four copies. Well, and to go back to number two, there are some examples where books that we overordered that I wish I ordered less of were a lot of those Image number ones that
looks good. You want to give it a shot.
Yeah, but then
it's a pooper.
Right. They don't pick up. So curse words we ordered very conservatively on. And that's one of the ones that just jumped up and exploded, and now people are looking for it. And I wish that I had ordered more curse words in 7-2 Eternity, and I wish I had ordered more copies of Kill or Be Killed when it first came out. I mean, now we've got, I don't know, like fourth printings or something of all the issues in the shelf, so we have it in the store, and the trade is out. But that was a book that just sold on pure quality because of the creative team.
Baker Phillips, right?
Right.
We've always had good luck with them, and we upped our orders for it. But apparently not quite enough.
So I guess if I had to sum 2016 up, it would be I wish I had ordered less Marvel event books, and I wish I had ordered more quality standalone Image books. And that also, again, touches on your Valiant comments, where what we seem to be seeing the biggest increase in are books where people don't have to plug themselves into continuity.
Yep.
Where books – people can come in and just – grab the first issue off the shelf and never have to worry about reading another title or another tie-in or missing something because this character from Walking Dead is going to appear in curse words.
And that's good because I still have my answers for this to go over, but I want to bounce off that just a little bit. And you talked about continuity. I want to take it a step further with IDW and all their licensed products and their Revolution, their, all of their different former toy and cartoon properties that they've now brought in and they're putting into this one big jumbled universe. I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to drive excitement for the other titles, but what they're doing isn't working. We don't have people clamoring in to try and get all these tie-ins for these different things.
Subscribers. But admittedly, I don't know if you looked at them, but I haven't looked at the sales for those books. For all I know, we haven't sold very many of them. But for all we know, they could be, they could be pretty good. I'm sure there are some people excited about it. But that goes back to an instance of what we talked about in the last podcast with Marvel sticking too many characters in so many books that share the same adjectives and sort of not getting people excited anymore about them. Whereas this is something where, if I were 11 and you told me that there was a universe where all of these characters existed in, I would have bought copies to hand out to my friends too. It would have been like the coolest thing ever. So I think that there's probably a market for the book, but it's just not in our store.
Yeah.
And we tried. We brought in all of the books. We brought in at least a couple issues of all of the Revolution titles and the tie-ins and everything, and it didn't really take. Oh. But I think it's a neat idea, and I think it's an idea where contrary to Marvel's throwing everybody together in the same teams and everything. And I think it is a neat idea that could very well work, and it could have some long-term legs for IDW. If, for instance, I know that they're talking about a movie universe that's going to share a lot of those characters. I think it'd be kind of cool if that ends up getting off the ground and somehow, you know, those comics become very relevant. It could be kind of neat.
I think the way that I would have liked to have seen it would have been an isolated event, because I think what happened is it could have killed some people coming to the line for that product, now seeing that they had to buy into everything. But that's neither here nor there. We're not the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, what do I think I underordered that I would have ordered more? Seven to Eternity was on my list. The one that we talked about all year, Rebirth.
Oh yeah.
We were the largest order in the area, and we could have doubled it and still probably sold out. So I'd say Rebirth. But then there's one that you got to go all the way back to the beginning, kind of the beginning of 2016, that we got the first prints. We got the second prints. We couldn't get the third. We got the fourth prints. We got the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh prints of the number one issue.
So what month did that come out?
I'm pretty sure it came out in March or something like that, because
already?
I think so, because we'd had them in hand when we went to San Diego. We had like a third or fourth.
So they've been double shipping it then, right?
I think so, yeah.
This is already on issue 15.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're talking about.
And if it didn't come out in 2016, it's certainly the subsequent issues, which we've had to order, I think up through issue 6, we were ordering third and fourth printings of them.
Fifth printings, I mean,
it was crazy. Yeah. Every time we upped our orders. For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, it's a little known book in the Marvel Universe by Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness called Spider-Man Deadpool. Man.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about it, it's Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness. You put those two on Deadpool, sky's the limit. We keep upping our orders every issue,
mm-hmm.
and they sell every time. So that's one that right at the beginning, whether it was issue one was in 2015, which it might have been, but certainly, like I said, at least through that first arc before they started having the break issues, holy cow, we were so deep on those. And those issues were still selling out of those first, second, third issues.
Well, and the thing with that is we doubled. So for the first couple of issues, we doubled our orders. So we took
our
Deadpool
the
numbers
title.
We took our numbers from Amazing Spider-Man. We took our numbers from Deadpool. And we combined them and we added a few. And that still was not enough.
Yep. And then we added, I think it was like 10 for the next one.
It was huge.
Still wasn't enough. I mean, yeah. So kudos on that book. Yay, Marvel, mm-hmm. for that one. All right. So the last question. Although readers love $2.99 comics, or less, aren't the $4, $5, or $6 single issues much more profitable for comic shop owners and give you higher margins? So first and foremost, we calculate our margins by percentage. So it doesn't matter for us if it's a $2.99 or $4.99. Our percentage margin is still the same, mm-hmm. because that's by publisher based on yours. It's 6-month rolling history of orders, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and there's some outliers and stuff to factor in there, but
by and large, that's kind of the way that works. I'll go first on this one.
Sure.
My impression is I would rather sell $2.99 books. And the reason that I would rather sell $2.99 books is, yes, I know I may leave, you know, 53 cents profit or 55 cents profit or whatever the discount tier is on the table by not selling a $3.99 book. But at $2.99, if an issue comes out that's kind of it's not enough usually to mm-hmm. have someone jump off the bandwagon and take it off their pull list. They'll usually see it through for another issue or two, which usually is enough to give it legs to get back going. I also like $2.99 because I think people, and I don't know why it works the way it does, but when there's a reason that things are priced at 99 cents instead of even $3. When people see the two in their mind, a lot of people think it's cheaper. Even though it's a penny less, it feels like less. So people will buy two books at $2.99, mm-hmm. but they may only buy one book at $3.99 because it's more.
There's some other stuff behind the 99 pricing too. But
all that kind of stuff. But so for me, $2.99 is a much more comfortable price, especially considering the amount of advertising that's in books now. The amount of reduction in pages that we see by and large on a lot of publications, and the production quality. Mm-hmm. So for me, I would rather sell $2.99, and purely speaking from new books standpoint, not mm-hmm. back issues, anything like that.
Yeah, I'd rather sell take. $150 Marvel Omnibus all day long, but it ain't going to happen. So the other issue, there's a couple of them. I think, would I rather sell $299, $399, $499? I would rather sell the $499 books, but the problem is it's more of a risk for the store to get those $499 books in because you have more upfront capital stuck in them. So Civil War II is a great example where they had a higher cover price, which means that you upfront we're paying in. Yeah, but the possibility is there to, you know, if an average store is going to be at a 50 or a 53% margin.
For the big two.
For the big two. So let's say that – let's just say it's a 50 though, you know, and it's a $6 book or it's a $5 book. Now you're paying $250 to have that $5 book in the shop. I would rather pay $1.50 to have a $3 book in the shop because, again, you're going to get $250 if you sell the $5 book. But at the same time, your upfront cost is a dollar more, right? And – it's going to be over time. If that book doesn't sell, you've got more wasted capital sitting on your shelf. There are some instances where it's totally worth it. And I think this could probably have its own 2-hour podcast discussing this, just this topic alone. But I think with the market, what it kind of is and how quickly, if a title gets relaunched, if tomorrow they were to relaunch Uncanny Inhumans for some reason. The odds of me ever selling the Uncanny Inhumans that we have on the shelf right now are next to nil. And that's a book where if they raised that to a $4.99 cover price, I probably just would never order anything past subs because who wants to be stuck with that? We talked about Squadron Supreme in the last podcast. I've got issues of Hyperion. I've got issues of Nighthawk. I've got issues of Squadron Supreme on the shelf that probably will never sell. And so I wish those books were $2.99 because then I don't have as much money sitting on the shelf unsold as I do with a $3.99 book, let alone a $4.99 book. Yep. DC's guilty of that too, obviously, with Dark Knight Master Race, where they've, you know, what is it? $5.99 an issue? I think
something. I think there's all those different levels, right? You can get the
hardcover that's $12.99.
$12.99,
right? Yeah. So that's something too, where every company is going to be guilty of doing it. But for me, because of the risk, I would rather sell volume. Mm-hmm. If someone comes into your store and they have $10 to spend, they're going to spend their $10, whether or not they grab two books or they grab three books. At the end of the day, they're going to be picking, you know, they're going to be picking books off of your shelf. But if they grab three books instead of two, that's less stuff that you have. That's less capital you have tied up.
Right. And it allows you to potentially bring in a deeper line.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we can, as a comic shop,
if we're spending the same, you're saying
if all things were equal at $1,000, if you had $1,000 to spend on bringing books in for the month. At $2.99, I can bring in more titles and deeper volumes of those titles than I can at $3.99. That's common sense. That's you know, that's math.
Right.
Right. And a lot of comic stores are on a fixed budget because of multiple variables. Now, we have flexibility in how much we order. We order based on need, based on whatever. So we're not tied quite necessarily to that. But we do have a line where we're not going to overextend ourselves. And so even though that line can flex and can be out there, at $2.99, you just give the retailer a lot more potential to hook additional readers, to hook new readers, to add things to a pull list. And essentially, you hook people into your line of comics as opposed to another.
Yeah. Well, and another thing to consider, too, we're talking about books going to the shelf. We haven't really talked about books that are going to our subscribers. So if you're a subscriber, and you're not the type of person that comes in, makes a pull list, and never shows up again. If you're our average subscriber who's always going to come in and get their books, whether it's weekly or monthly, I would love for them to be buying $4.99 books.
Oh, of course.
I would love that. So that subscribers is a little bit different than off the shelf, but you got to remember that you're primarily your off the shelf customers are people that, yeah, you're going to have subscribers that grab books that they're not subscribed to. They're going to grab them off the shelf, and that's all well and good. But primarily those people that are going to come in and buy a stack of books tend to be people that are going to have subscriptions anyways. And so you're not basing that rack order for your subscribers. So I think where I'm going with this is try, if you want to steer your subscribers to buying more expensive books, do it. That's great. You know, they're going to come in, they're going to buy the book anyway. Don't necessarily clutter your rack up with $4.99 or $5.99 books, though, unless you think you're really going to move. And, you know, who's going to order a book that they don't think they're going to move, right? But I mean, don't
go
heavy.
Well, we've been to shops that blanket order everything.
Yeah, but don't go heavy and don't go deep into the more pricey books because it just is going to tie up more capital.
Tying up your money. Well, or in the case of, like you said, the Civil War and all the tie-ins, you're essentially throwing away money in some instances. I mean, we look at those books. There's some books that when we bought the store over 2 years ago, there were books that we looked at and were like, if we can sell these for 50 cents, mm-hmm. we're making out ahead, right? And that's not the position you want to be in as a retailer years down the line. Like, you don't want to look at your stock and go, God, if I just get a quarter, 50 cents for this, at least I got something back.
The risk that a store runs is you don't want to go too heavily in either direction, because if you completely clutter your racks up with every title, and with a lot of copies of every title, obviously you're going to go broke and you're going to go out of business. If you are a comic store that just sells Walking Dead, Harley Quinn, Star Wars, and Deadpool, you'll probably have a pretty healthy sell-through, but you're not really going to have a lot of people coming in looking for anything either.
Right.
You know, see, so it's a fine line, just like anything else. It's like a Ma and Pa grocery store. How much milk do they order? You know, our products depreciate; they don't expire, but they might as well expire. You know, again, we're not going to be selling a lot of copies of those issues of Nighthawk off of the shelf. So it may as well have an expiration date on it.
Right.
So you have to be careful what you order, but you can't be too cautious and just alienate the people that are coming in looking for those certain titles. Just don't order 15 copies of them.
Right.
Unless you're in Manhattan. And then you'll probably want to order 50 copies.
And to that end, we do have the ability in most cases to reorder things. You know, we could go in between printings, things like that, but you want to hedge your bets, be confident with when you submit your order, mm-hmm. and know that if you don't have it, well, you know what? There's a calculated risk in that. And that is part of the trouble of the model that we're in. You know, the burden is all on the retailer, right? We're the ones that have to place the order 2 months ahead, sight unseen. We're the ones that have to fork the cash out up front. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in absence of returnability, like Rebirth, we're the ones that are stuck with our fannies out in the air. You know,
right. Again, the burden's on us. But at the same time, if by issue 3, no one's picked up Squadron Supreme, then we go in the FOC and we knock it down to 0.
Subs only.
You know, and if we don't have any subs. So, it is – the burden is on us for a certain period of time. But again, everything's going to come back around. And if Marvel cancels a book at issue 5, then, you know, that's reflected on them. And eventually you're going to – stores placing healthy orders are going to direct the market.
Yeah.
If Squadron Supreme can never make it past issue 5, unless, I don't know, let's say Alex Ross is doing the art or something like that on the, you know, interior art, or they get a giant – a game name on the book, then eventually Marvel's not really going to – what incentive is there for them to print it? Yeah. So sores do have power, but it's very long term, and it has to be kind of a cohesive power.
And I think that that's a great point to make, for anyone out there who's running a store, starting a store, thinking about starting a store. You shouldn't be ashamed to knock an order down to zero, right? Mm-hmm. You have a finite amount of space, a finite amount of capital. And just because you feel like you should have an issue, you know, a copy or two copies of each book on the shelf, just in case that unicorn walks in that wants it, that's not a good enough reason in most markets. In some markets, like you said, in Manhattan, yeah, you're probably, you know, your population base is millions, you know. In small towns, in smaller areas, you don't have that foot traffic. You can't pander to the unicorn. You have to take what you know you can do and make, you know, there may be that book, Saga, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Our subs have been very steady on Saga, but we still will order an extra one to put out on the shelf, or a couple of mm-hmm. extra ones. Walking Dead, our subs are stable, but we know that book we're always going
to
sell.
I just came up with, I'm going to interrupt quick. I want to go back to Drew and Kyle's number one question. What could publishers, mid-tier and smaller, do to support the local comic store and help me succeed in the new year? Any comic publisher that is not on the FOC program needs to get their ass in gear and get on the FOC. FOC is Final Order Cutoff, and that is a program that Marvel and DC and Image and a good amount of the smaller companies are in. What that does is several weeks before a book is going to, they're going to have an FOC cutoff date.
So we have initial order.
Well, I guess I just said FOC cutoff, which is final order cutoff.
So we have initial
orders. It's like people
that
say ER room or an ATM machine.
So we have initial orders that go in about mm-hmm. 2 months before the things start to arrive. So January for March is where we're at right now.
Right. Yeah.
Then there's a cutoff date within that where you can go in and edit your order. You can up it. You can reduce it.
Well, and it's a valuable tool too. And usually, I think always, FOCs are due on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So every Monday, you've got if a store's not open on a Monday, maybe they're doing it on a Sunday, but you have your store owners in there adjusting their FOC orders. You can adjust it up. If you did knock your Squadron Supreme down to zero and some guy moves from Kansas next to your store and he comes in, he needs to start getting Squadron Supreme, odds are you can probably go onto the FOC and bump your next order or your next issue of Squadron Supreme up by one. And it goes both ways too, because you can knock books down. And FOC is very important to keep track of, especially for your big event books,
yep,
where you're going to order heavily. You might knock your Civil War II. You might have been ordering 50 copies to start with, and you get to, you know, issue 3, and you sold 20 copies,
right?
Maybe. Well, it's time to jump on your FOC.
Drop that to 25 or something.
Right. And for issue 4, assuming that it's still on there, drop that down. If a book's – I've never been 100% clear on – several aspects of the FOC. For instance, variants. I've heard from people that that a lot of variants are produced based on numbers given to the FOC. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I think sometimes variants are printed before the FOC numbers are due. But with the FOC, you can cut things down. You can raise numbers up. It's just an unbelievably valuable tool. But not all companies are on the FOC. And so there are a lot of books, a lot of kind of back of previews companies, comic publishers, where we don't always order those books. But somebody might come into the store looking for it. And if it's on the FOC, we can adjust our order. If not, sometimes we can still get it through Diamond. But not always. Conversely, there may be books that we want to go in heavily that are in the back of previews for whatever reason, and they don't start doing very well for us, so we'd like to be able to knock those down. There are some publishers that are not that don't do FOC. So I would say my little tangent is publishers need to all get on FOC. It helps us. It helps them. The only other thing back on question four about the price of books, FOC certainly do help keep track of that, especially again if it's a $5.99 or $4.99 book, you got to be able to just knock your orders down if you're a smaller store.
Right. So I think that's going to wrap it up for these questions. Sound good?
Sure.
All right. We do have some more questions waiting in the queue from @ZachFig on Twitter. He sent us a couple of things. So if you have questions about any of the inner workings of the store, let us know. Shoot us an email at podcast@cowbungacomics.com, Cowbunga with a K. You can find us on Twitter, @IncrediCow.
And I don't know how many edits Eric is going to do to this afterwards, but we had – just recording this, we had several phone calls. We've had
– A diamond delivery.
I've gotten some – I mean, oh my gosh, just this morning. there's no breaks.
But that's part of the fun.
Oh, absolutely.
So
excuse us if we sound a little like we're jumping around here, but we might have people knocking on the door while we're talking. So,
yes. And to that end, if you ever want to know what we're doing, what kind of products we have, new back issues that have come in, the best way is to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/IncrediCow. We'd love to hear from you. We want to know what it is that you guys are looking to find out. I do know for a fact that we've got just some regular customers out there who are interested in hearing a little bit more. I know we've got some people that are listening that are pondering opening a store. And I know that we've got some other industry folks out there who have a store. There's no bad questions. We don't have the right answer for everyone. Mm-hmm. All we can do is tell you what we've learned in the 25 years that you've been in the comics industry as a reseller at cons and things like that. And as the 2 years that we've been, you know, in charge of running a brick and mortar store. And there's still challenges we face every day.
Well, and more importantly, if you are somebody that has a store and you hear something, you're like, hey, that's not right at all.
Tell us
because, man, we'll take any constructive criticism, anything that's going to help us be better. You know, if something that Eric said was totally wrong, nothing I said, but
yeah, no, you're perfect.
No.
Also, if anyone out there ever wants to stop in and see the store, shoot us a note ahead of time. Let us know so we can, maybe schedule something, get some drinks or dinner or something.
Meat and cheese platter.
Absolutely. We'll lay it all out for you. But with that, I think we're going to call it an episode, and we'll talk to you next time.
On behalf of all of us, thank you for listening to this episode of the Cowcast. You can find us on all the main social media outlets, including Facebook at facebook.com/IncrediCow, on Twitter @IncrediCow, or on Instagram @CowabungaComics. To send an email to us directly, send it to podcast@cowabungacomics.com, or to join in the discussion, you can hop on our new Cowabunga Comics forum at forums.cowabungacomics.com.